And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay.
Let's see, before we do the new members, can we just figure out the old business? If everybody's read the minutes and approves the minutes. I don't know what number one is for, but do we have we have a move to approve the minutes. Any second?
Second.
Don Vesperin, second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the minutes are approved. Now, if we could introduce the new members. On the list first, we have Meredith Edwards. If you could tell us about you, Meredith.
I have been doing bingo for about 6 years. I've been in charge at Colorado Storm Scheduling and doing some of the county stuff for about 3. There are about 6,000 members. And then I have kid playing there, and I also have some at Real, which is another big soccer club. So hopefully can help represent some of
them. All right, good. That sounds great. We're glad you're here. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Over here by Tom, Vera. By Tom. And so the next new member, we have Donovan Glassburn.
Hi, I've been in bingo since 1991 as a bingo hall manager, and then started a company called Bingo Planet up in the north in 1993. Been doing that for quite a few years. President of Colorado Charitable Bingo Association for a number of years, and involved in some legislation that brought on progressive bingo and electronics and various other things. And then currently also involved in some South Carolina bingo and Alabama bingo too.
Okay, good. Thank you. And then we have Perry Joltek.
Good morning. I run a bingo for BMHBJ. I've been doing that for about 2 years now, and I do all the books and everything on it. So that, along with my 35 years of retail experience and management, I feel that can bring a lot to the table and help us grow.
Okay, good. Anybody have any questions for the new members before we continue on?
Welcome.
Yeah, that's what I say.
Nice. Well, to
thanks to have him here. And Tom has been reappointed to the board, so he gets to continue on with whatever he was doing. Thanks. Glad you're here, Tom.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so we might as well. In this old business, there was a number one, volunteer tips at bingo occasions. I don't know what that was about, so.
There was a question at the last meeting about being able to tip volunteers as
opposed
to pay them. We did look into that. Right now, the way the Constitution and the rules are written, it would not be allowed. You can potentially give the money to the nonprofit itself as opposed to giving it to a specific volunteer. But we are looking at ways going forward that we might be able to adjust legislation to allow for that, but right now it would have to be directly to the nonprofit itself.
Okay, thank you for that. So let's move on to the new business. So we have some reports coming to us from the Secretary of State's office.
We do indeed. So for the board members and anybody in the audience, if you look in your packet of information, you'll see a table there. It looks like Bo has it out already. So last time, the last meeting that we had, we presented actually some very similar numbers. You know, we've only been through essentially a quarter since our last meeting, so we don't have a lot of new information to share. I thought since we had 3 new members on the board, though, it might be a good idea just to give them an idea of the kind of information that we present. So I'm just going to go over some of those old, or some of the graphs that we've already presented just to kind of see what we look at. And then we've got a couple of new things from this first quarter here. I'm happy to answer any other questions that you have. So what we presented in the last meeting were a few graphs just to show we had our complete 2012 financial information. So just wanted to show some trends over the past 3 years. The first thing that we showed was that charitable gaming revenue is actually up. So it's up by almost $2 million, which I think at face value is a pretty impressive rise. It's when you dig down that I think it starts to get pretty interesting. So when you look at what has happened to raffles, you see that raffles have gone up by over $2 million. And we think this is mostly accounted for by some of the big house raffles that the larger nonprofits in the Denver metro area have been running, and potentially some smaller raffles. One thing that is a part of this, and we think could be a bigger part, is some of you may know that they've started doing some 50-50 raffles at big pro sporting events. And those have started to generate some pretty significant revenue. So I think we'll see this continue to go up over the next couple of years. If you look at bingo, the picture is a little bit more mixed. You can see there's a fairly big drop in from 2010 to 2011 of over $1 million, and then a slight rise again in 2012. So a little bit tough to say. I mean, I think we all know if you look at bingo over 5 or 10 years, we know that the trend is fairly steadily downwards. Last couple of years, it's a little bit harder to see that trend. And then finally, this was actually kind of surprising to me, I think, just because we hear from so many licensees that pull tabs are a really big part of their operations. Pull tab gross revenue, at least, has actually gone down fairly consistently over the past 3 years. And we haven't dug in to see, you know, whether this is a drop in bar and club room pull tabs or a drop in pull tabs at bingo occasions. We could certainly do that analysis if it would be helpful. So that was kind of what we presented, as I said, in the last meeting. For this meeting, just to sort of put a new perspective on that same information that we just showed you, we thought it'd be interesting to look at all games next to each other. And what I'll present here are three different graphs so that we're looking at gross revenues, profits, and then margins. What this graph shows us is fairly consistent with what we just saw. So this is looking from 2010 to 2012, what has happened to each of these six different types of games. Again, raffles has grown by over 40%, nearly 50% in the last 3 years. Progressive bingo and bar and club pull tab have both risen as well, but by less than 10%. And then when you get over to the last three there, regular bingo, pull tabs at bingo, and progressive pull tabs, which I think typically happen at bingo occasions as well, you can see that those are all suffering when you look just at gross revenues, right? So regular bingo has gone down by probably 3-4%, pull tabs closer, probably about 4%. And then progressive pull tabs, I haven't been around long enough to sort of know the history very well of progressive pull tabs, but I think it's safe to say that not a lot of organizations are finding a lot of value in progressive pull tabs. So, you know, whether or not those are kind of a part of your product mix in the future remains to be seen. So expanding on that a little bit, this shows very similar. So the blue bar that you see here is the same bar. So that's looking at what's happened to gross revenue over the past 3 years. What we've added here, though, is the change in net profits. So this is really the change in how much of that money from gross revenue is actually going right into the pockets of nonprofit organizations. You can see raffles, they've both grown by a lot, and they've actually become more profitable. So something has happened with the cost structure. And again, I think it's probably because of some of these larger scale raffles where you have some economies of scale that net profits have gone up even more than gross revenue. Same thing with progressive bingo and bar and club pull tabs. They've grown a bit, but they've also become significantly more profitable on a sort of per unit basis. And then, of course, we get to regular bingo again, and you can see regular bingo shrunk by 2-3% in gross revenue terms, but it's actually become much less profitable over the past 3 years. We need to probably do a little bit more analysis to see why this is. Is it, you know, is it rent? Are the cost of supplies going up? What's happening there that's making regular bingo so much less profitable? And certainly be interested in hearing from the board if you have any thoughts on that. Pull tabs, again, have gone down in overall gross revenue, but actually, even though they're losing revenue, they're becoming a bit more profitable. And progressive pull tabs is, again, sort of the same story. And then finally, just to add one more, I'm sorry, little word boxes here, same kind of what I just said. Just to add one more layer on this, the green dots here, so the bars that we've been looking at, again, are trends over time, so from 2010 to 2012. What the green dots show us here is just what's happening in 2012. So showing us exactly how profitable, so what percentage of gross revenues turns into net profits for each of these different types of games. We thought it may be may look a little bit different than this, but what you can see is that for the most part, the games that have grown over the past 2 years or 3 years are overall the more profitable of the games. So if somebody spends a dollar on a raffle, typically about 61, 62 cents is going to the nonprofit. Whereas if you look at regular bingo, if somebody spends a dollar on a bingo card, probably only about 10 cents or so is actually ending up in the nonprofit's pockets. So this, I think when you think about it, this actually makes sense if you look at the growth numbers. So organizations are starting to do more raffles, they're starting to do more progressive bingos, and I think that's probably because they've seen that, yeah, I'm going to make a lot of money at raffles without having to make such a big investment. So anyway, just thought that was an interesting graph. And I think especially the standout here, obviously, is the raffles, and not sure how much more those will grow over the next years. But go ahead, Don.
Down in Glassburn, just have a question, Greg, on poll tabs. The event tickets go into that, correct?
They do.
Because I think that's probably a big reason why profitability is higher, even though sales might be a little bit lower, because they're getting profit right then and there. I think that's helping the charities out quite a bit.
Right. And they seem to be very popular. I mean, according to the suppliers we've talked to and the licensees, they seem to be getting more and more popular.
I think they're a safer bet for charities because they don't have as much inventory and they run through it that night and show a profit right then and there.
They turn quicker.
Yeah. They turn quicker, right?
Yeah. All across the country, that's really the direction everybody's going. Instead of having, 3,000 to 8,000 count deals, they've got, anywhere from 200 to 500 count.
Yeah.
Much quicker to go through them. It's more fun for the players.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it kind of adds another level of excitement to the game.
Yeah. Well, and you create more winners.
Right.
During a session.
Yeah, absolutely.
And big winners. So it's kind of nice.
Yeah. Dan, did you have a comment as well?
The only comment I have is, if we're commenting, is we know the reasons that pull tabs and bingo are down is because the spending that people are doing is much less than it used to be. And also the number of players that are coming is down. And you can see that from your first quarter to the four quarters of the year before. So as the economy improves, we're finding that people are not so much worried about how much money they're going to spend on pull tabs as they are at this point in time. So they have cut way back, and that's one of the reasons that pull tabs at bingo is so far down compared. And also, the same thing is true for just regular bingo.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether you're paying out $1,500 or $2,000 or whatever it is. It's a matter of how many people are coming. And I think all the charities that I've ever talked to, if they could make their profit just doing bingo, they'd be very happy because they could care less about pull tabs than in.
Seems like what we've heard is the opposite, though, from a lot of people, which is that bingo is really a loss leader.
It is, because now still, the pull tabs still are the things that make the profit. I was just saying, if it was the opposite way, that people would really be happy about that.
Yeah, that makes sense. But just the last little bit here. Again, we're only through one quarter of 2013, so it's a bit tough to paint any picture as opposed to, compared to prior years. Just wanted to look at some of the margin trends. So again, you can see the red line on the very top there, that's raffles. The margins took a little bit of a hit in 2012, but looks like they're on their way back up in 2013. And, for me, for all intents and purposes, I don't really see a big change from 2012 to first quarter 13 in the margins for any of these other games. Again, we're going to have to see what happens in future quarters to really make a call on that. But, that's certainly something that would be nice to see, an upward slope as opposed to flat. Anyway, those are the reports that we have. And again, you have much more detail there in front of you in those tables. If you have any other questions about that now or after the meeting, be happy to answer those. And that's also, as always, that report is available on the website. So if you want to point anybody else to that, that's on our bingo raffle homepage.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Greg, one more.
Sure.
On the raffles you've made, the larger raffles, I mean, all these raffles are happening. Are they like cars? But what are some of these big raffles that are occurring? They're outside of bingo halls, obviously.
Yeah, so typically there are a number of different organizations that are running them. There are a couple of organizations that are running house raffles, as I said, in Denver. And, sales for those take place through a number of different means. But you're right. I mean, they're certainly not in bingo halls, at least that we know of.
Yeah, they're you know, $1 million house here, $1 million house there, and so the prize is huge and the income is huge. You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And it's a Boys and Girls Club and
St. Jude.
Yeah, are doing the houses.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. And then Crunky Sports Charities and the Colorado Amateur Hockey Association are the organizations involved in doing the 50-50 raffles at Nuggets and Avalanche games and that sort of thing. And just as this was just an interesting story, I was in Phoenix this last weekend at a Diamondbacks game, and they raised $100,000 in one 50-50 raffle in one night. It was like a sellout crowd. They were raising money for those 19 firefighters in Prescott.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was pretty incredible to see, you know, to see that much money going into a pretty worthy cause.
Yeah, you got to have a big audience to be able to.
You do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, sports teams do. They have.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They got arenas. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
That's great.
Yeah.
Anything else for the board on the report? Okay, moving along.
Progressive raffles.
All right. So, as
most of you know, there was a bill passed in this last legislative session, HB 1101, that allowed for progressive raffles. The bill is effective on January 1st of 2014, so still a little bit of good of the ways down the road. But one of the tasks that we have is the Secretary of State's office is to obviously to create rules around progressive raffles. The statute has some kind of limitations on the authority that we have to make those rules, and we plan on making rules to effectively regulate. I mean, I think we're always trying to strike that balance between being able to effectively regulate new games, but also make sure that nonprofits are sort of have the freedom to use those games to make money for their organization. So. One of the first steps in this, the first step that we took was, along with our outstanding legal team, we have three of them in the room today, did some research on what other states have done. So, you know, all across the country, progressive raffles have been a part to a greater or lesser degree in different states. It's new in Colorado. So rather than start from scratch, we thought we'd look at what other people have done, maybe what they've done wrong, what's worked, what hasn't. And based on that, we drafted up some progressive raffles rules. We sent these to the Bingo Advisory Board last week. Tried to give you a week to take a look through them. And we'd like to use this time. And of course, we also have them available on our website if you'd like to take a look at them there. And wanted to take the time today to go through some comments, any comments that the board or our audience has on those. And this could take an hour. It could take 20 minutes. We'll sort of see how it goes. We'd like to make sure that we're focusing just on the progressive raffles rules because those are sort of what are up for discussion at this point. And I thought it would be useful. Rick Johnson, who's one of the newest members of our board, was actually sent us in some really good written comments. So I thought it might be useful to start from there as a base, get some of Rick's comments. I think we have a few comments prepared based on what he said, and then open it up to the board. And as Rick is going along, too, if you have any thoughts on what Rick has sent to us, that'd be great to hear from you. So, Rick, if you wouldn't mind starting us off, I think there were kind of three main comments that you have. If you wouldn't mind starting us off with the first there.
8.4.1b2, the licensee must place all cards from the deck in a sealed envelope. The cards must not be visible through the envelope. And a question had, would a locked case with the cards facing face down satisfy the rule? I kind of felt that the be additional work and funds required, expenses for the licensee to follow the rule that's written.
And the additional expenses you're talking about, Rick, are the envelopes?
Individual envelopes.
Mm-hmm.
I realize they don't cost that much, but it's a one-time use if they're sealed, so you've got to destroy the envelope to remove the card.
Okay.
Is the way I understood that. So.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I'll start by saying here too. I think this is going to be sort of a forum. We may not be able to give you direct answers today. I think this is going to give us a lot of food for thought. I think the thinking behind this, Rick, and again, this came from looking at a lot of other statutes and rules in other states. And what we found was that there were a few other states who had used these envelopes. We saw a couple states who don't use the envelopes. Our thinking behind this was we see these progressive playing card progressive raffle games happening in two places. One is in a bar or a club, like a VFW post or a Moose Lodge, and the other is in bingo halls. I mean, we imagine these may be happening in bingo halls as well. I think our concern in large part is when these are happening in places that are open to the public, where there's a lot more traffic coming through. We want to make sure that there's minimal opportunity for tampering. And we think that the envelopes kind of put that extra level of security, so that it's going to be much more difficult to sort of discover where the Queen of Spades is if you have it in an envelope that's sealed that you can't see, than if you just had it sort of posted up on a board. Even if that board is locked, I think it's easy to see ways that the folks could tamper with that. So that's where this is coming from. Your point is well taken. We understand that there's an additional expense here, but again, I think our interest is in making sure that these games are able to be played securely and people feel safe and secure in buying their tickets. So anyway, that's sort of where we came with this rule, but certainly take that under advisement. And I'm not sure if there are any other comments from the board.
I'm asking all the questions.
That was number two.
Oh, sorry.
I don't know. I was just going to see if we wanted to finish his, or did you have a comment on that last one?
I guess I know you got some of these from other states, but can you, I guess the only thing I have is I understand the security of it. It's a huge issue. I completely agree with that. I think when it comes to progressives, a lot of us have seen pretty self-policing, especially in bingo. I guess my concern is why just this one game? Why can't the charities use their creativity to figure out other games that'll be good? Because players are going to get tired of just doing that. I'm just throwing that out there. This is a great idea. It's just overall, is there something we can have where they can be more creative, where they can do different games and try different stuff? Maybe it's, they get picked from a raffle and they get to go choose behind a curtain, and get a prize. Maybe it's a percentage prize. I mean, we can get very creative on that stuff. And I don't worry as much. I think it's fair to worry about, but I don't worry as much because players, you're talking $5,000, players police it. And it's tough to tamper or anything like that. And so that's just kind of the ground level that I see. I see the track you're on. I just have more of the concern of kind of going one dimensional and can we open it up a little bit more so they can do more things.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Donnie. I mean, I think our approach to this was, so there are two types of progressive games that we're allowing for. One is that playing card, and then the other is the members only raffle, which I think a lot of organizations have. From what I've heard kind of on the down low is that a lot of organizations do those already. Our thinking though behind this was, and this is partly informed by I think our experience when progressive bingos first came in, and I think we sort of we opened the floodgates, and I think there were a number of issues. I'm not sure if you all are aware of those, but with big prizes, it just made it very hard to regulate again. And I think by limiting it to these two games, first of all, these were really the two games that we saw in a number of different states that were allowed for the most part. And there were a number of other states that narrowed it down to just these two. And I think our approach here, as it has been elsewhere, is to say, okay, these are allowed now. We'd like to start with sort of a narrow framework to make sure that this works for charities, to make sure that it's regulatable. And then, as we move down the road in the future, allow for that sort of innovation. And this isn't the last time we'll go through rulemaking. So anyway, that's kind of our thought process behind that. But again, point well taken. And we struggled with that internally as well, to be sure.
Hi, Dan Gensig, Chairman. So this is a progressive raffle. I see you put a limit of 15,000 or something, just like bingo. Is there a reason for that, since they can give away million-dollar houses? I don't know why you would want to limit the amount of money that you're talking about in regards to a raffle,
yeah.
Since it is a raffle.
Right. I think that comes from two different areas. First of all, I think we want to have consistency with other types of progressives that we have in the rules. So that's why the $15,000 number specifically. But yeah, to your question. I mean, I think we see these taking place in a much different context than you see typical raffles. So, a house raffle, you have people selling tickets door to door, you have people selling tickets over the phone, that sort of thing. These we really see taking place at a bingo occasion, at a Moose Lodge. And outside of that context, we really don't see that happening very often. So that's where that's why you see it reflect a little bit more the progressive side of our rules as opposed to the raffle side of our rules when it comes to those sorts of limits.
And since I didn't read the whole thing, so do you have if you do one 52 card raffle that day and nobody gets it, is the one you drew out of the picture then?
Yes.
Okay, so eventually it gets down to like
a must double. So it gets down to 2-3 cards, right? Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Bo had a question, and I want to make sure we get back to Rick's comments here.
Yeah, thank you, and I also appreciate Donnie's openness on the idea. I'm Bo Williams on behalf of Veterans Organizations. This is kind of new to us. When I was involved 10 years ago more in a active hall, you know, we had the progressive cards, you know, where you guys would get certain numbers and that would allow you to take a chance and pick number 7, 9, whatever, behind that door. If it said jackpot, you won the jackpot. If not, it rolled over. So that's how I can only identify with this kind of setup. I think it's good, except that they're, being that the first offering in 841A is for member-only progressive drawings, draw special attention to, at the drawing, license places names of all members in the pool. Well, just our post alone is 619 members. For all post members under what we call qualified membership, which is our auxiliaries, our roster is about 972. Out of that 972, I would say that there's probably only maybe 103 that we even know that they're still alive. That's true. It's like you can't believe all of a sudden once a year we'll get an email from National and says, oh, by the way, so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so passed away last year, 2 years ago, or whatever. They were finally notified of these people. So what I'm saying is that I think you see my point in a barrel that has all members in there that's to be drawn for, it's discouraging and disadvantageous to players as an incentive to go and want to participate in that. So, like others have said, you know, the playing card thing then becomes more appealing. Mm-hmm. So, I do believe that maybe we can tweak the member-only progressive. I don't know how possibly it can be done to say active members or something like that. You know, it's still a large amount of people. The biggest risk that would happen is that the jackpot for members only would be won more frequently. It would never reach a $15,000. The odds of that would be very small. But that being said, my real question is, I compare this to like progressive bingo. The organization establishes seed money for that progressive event. It's pretty much up to the organization to decide what amount. I believe that at the time we did $200 as the chosen seed money. In the case of any of these raffles, is there a restriction on that amount of seed money? Let's see, could we seed it with $1,000 to expedite the things? And I have about three issues, so let me just briefly do those without, and then you can address them all. Is that okay, Greg?
That's great.
Okay. The second, I would assume that there would be some sort of LE34 type form that would be very similar to 34B that we use, whereas that seed amount is put on there, and that's your starting jackpot amount and such and such, that kind of thing. The cost of a raffle ticket, you know, like in our the Progressive, we sell each face for a dollar. So can the individual organization in-house, where they start the seed money, can they determine that, well, we're going to sell, each ticket's going to be a dollar, and we're going to start it again with $200 seed money. So the value of each raffle ticket is a dollar. And then with that being said, can a member of our private club, because we have a club license, can that member buy multiple raffle tickets for a particular drawing? And I guess the last thing that I have in my mind is the stipulation on one of these, that the raffle, basically the raffle, as I understand, raffle tickets for a drawing, the drawing has to be that day. And I might have misread that, but that's kind of what I picked up reading it last night again. I confused myself. I can do that. Okay. So that's all I have, Greg.
All right.
It just kind of covers a lot of areas.
Great. I'll see if I can hit all those points. So first of all, let me address the seeding question, because that actually steals a little bit of Rick's thunder, because that was one of your comments as well, Rick. So it sounds like that's a concern, at least among a couple of people. So we, Rick, let me just read the comment or the question that Rick had. So we said that the licensee may retain any proceeds from raffle tickets sold after the Progressive prize reaches the $15,000 prize limit. And Rick's question was, can these additional dollars be used as seed money, like you said, for the following Progressive raffle game? So, and this is why we underwent this process, because you're making us think about things that, you know, we didn't think about or we thought about in a little different way than you maybe would on the ground. Our thinking here is, if you look at the Progressive Bingo rules, as you know, you can do a Progressive Bingo and you can seed that initial jackpot up to $500.
Yes, sir.
Or alternatively, you can have done a secondary jackpot in a prior Progressive Bingo
yes.
game and use whatever funds come from that, and that can be greater than $500. We initially shied away from doing the secondary Progressive jackpot
good.
In a... You're saying good?
I'm saying good. Secondary, I don't mind.
So it, in lieu of doing that, we said that you can sort of keep this money that comes in after your $15,000, you hit that $15,000 prize limit, and use that to seed your jackpot. What we run into, and both your comments made us think about this, is what if you're a smaller organization that's never going to reach that $15,000 jackpot? How do you seed that? How do you seed that next jackpot? It's a great question. And so what we're thinking, and we need to have some more internal discussions about this, but what we're thinking is that we'll probably try to have the Progressive Raffles rules mirror what are in the Progressive Bingo rules, like we've done in a lot of other places. So that'll mean you'll have that option. You can have a secondary jackpot going, you know, just as a, for example, contributing 10% of gross proceeds to that secondary jackpot as you go along, and then that rolls over to the next one. Or you can seed it with, you know, with your
own
other
money.
With your funds, right, exactly. Right. And I think we'd probably put a limit of $500 on that as well to get it rolling in the same way that you get a Progressive Bingo going. So that was sort of our initial thought, was the $15,000 thing, but I think your comments have made us rethink that quite a bit.
Well, just to interject, the one comment I have about what you just said is that the way I see it so far, I'm very positive about this, that you are taking into consideration each one of the organizations, whether large or small, and giving them leeway to set a lot of these conditions. If an organization can only afford $25 seed money, that's up to them.
Right.
And they can do it, and they can build that to, you know, hopefully a large amount. I would anticipate that I would see them eventually, oh, let's do $100 or let's do $150 in order to get more people to, you know, shell out for the tickets. So I really appreciate your all's effort on that, because at this point it looks like, you know, you're really, really trying to help the nonprofits.
A couple of comments on that, just so everybody's aware. We're leaning very forward by presenting this now versus we haven't really opened up the rules yet. We will be doing that in a more formal way. We'll make the announcement. There will be a hearing. There will be opportunity to provide this information to us. So I think that's consistent with what I've been speaking of for the last couple of years, and
yes,
making sure that we're being more open and we're communicating better as a group.
I really appreciate that, Mike.
So really, this is our first draft. We want you guys to nug on it for a while and provide that input. We also are going to have a formal process where we need to go through this again, and we're going to ask Rick to submit formally the same comments and any additional comments that he might have, as well as everyone else. So I appreciate you recognizing that, that we're making that effort. But just to address quickly a couple of the other questions, there will be a form that will probably look very similar to what we have on the Progressive Bingo forms currently. Licensees, as the rules are currently written, can set their own ticket price. There are a number of postings that you have to have up. It's similar to what you have in Progressive Bingo, so that people know what the rules are if you're selling, you know, one for $5, three for $10, that sort of thing. The question about can a member buy multiple raffle tickets, I think is the members only Progressive drawing is envisioned now. I'm not sure if that would really make sense. I think they probably could, but by you buying an extra ticket doesn't give you a greater chance of winning if you read through how the rules are written. But you can't, but on the playing card Progressive raffle, you can certainly buy as many tickets as you
want. Oh, it is. That increases your chance. Acceptable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, see, that makes a difference. And then the only roadblock is, like I said, the number of people. If it says all members,
yeah,
then we got a problem.
Yeah.
You know, because I would say out of 972, I might have 150 emails. Out of those 150, if I mailed them something, I would get at least 10 to 20% back as undeliverable.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's something we'll have to, as Mike said, we'll have to nug on.
Okay.
But that's certainly helpful to hear. The next question, I just want to hit your last question because, again, it dovetails on, Rick, I think your second comment. Your question, Bo, was, does the drawing have to be that same day as you read the rules? That's what it says, and you're right about that. So if you look at rule 8.4.5A, I believe, says the licensee must only sell tickets for a Progressive raffle drawing on the same day and at the same location as that drawing. Rick's question was very similar to yours. Can this rule be changed to read tickets may be sold anytime after the completion of the previous drawing for the next week's drawing? So again, just to walk you through a little bit of the logic of where we are coming from here. We know from speaking to other states and just sort of how these Progressives work that these raffles have the potential to get pretty big pretty quick and to get certainly over $1,000 in a lot of cases. So if you're familiar with our raffle rules and sort of the other section of our raffle rules in the Bingo raffle rules, you'll know that we have a set of requirements of things that need to be on a ticket if your prize is over $1,000, if your raffle prize is over $1,000. Because these Progressive raffles are going to be ongoing, there are going to be multiple iterations. We tried to find a way to feel comfortable with not having those requirements on these tickets, but also feeling like A, we could regulate it, and B, more importantly, really, that players, people who bought these tickets, felt safe in buying them, you know, if they bought them on, you know, Thursday and the drawing wasn't until a Sunday or something like that. So the compromise that we made was we're not requiring that we'll add, our plan is, at least as of right now, is to add an exception to the raffles rules that says that if the ticket is from a progressive raffle, you don't have to have these, I think there are 8 or 9 things that you have to have on a ticket, right. Shannon. You don't have to take the name and address of the person that you're selling to, but the sort of trade-off there is that these tickets have to be sold on the same day and at the same location. And again, that's to ensure that if, for whatever reason, you've been selling progressive raffle tickets for 2 weeks, and then you had to postpone it, and you didn't have people's, you know, name and address, you didn't have their contact information, they didn't know how to get in touch with you, that would be a problem. So that's kind of the balance that we're trying to strike there. I think if you look at it the opposite way, and we were to allow, tickets to be sold at different times and locations, then we would make the raffle tickets subject to the same requirements that are regular raffle tickets. So that's the trade-off that you have there.
I just see it being very advantageous to our organization.
Right.
Knowing how, say, the BFW operates, us being third largest post in the state out of 114, if we every week said that there was going to be this raffle on Friday night at 7 o'clock every week, and then every week we had a week to sell those tickets, then everybody knows that they should come in on Friday night, especially to be there and to knowing that they had participated in the drawing. But for one day, I mean, if I'm lucky, I might get sell 15 raffle tickets.
Right. So I guess the question for you is, for your post, is it worth it to, if you're going to, you know, be selling on multiple days, is it worth the extra effort that you're going to have to go through to print out those special tickets? You'll also have to submit them to our office if the rules stay as they are now. Is it worth that kind of extra effort to sell those extra tickets? And we're definitely looking for feedback on that. Because again, we're looking at it from sort of a regulatory perspective. So I don't know.
What's more compelling, do you think, having to come and purchase a ticket? I mean, driving your attendance for that Friday? Or I've already purchased a ticket, I better show up on Friday. What's a more compelling argument, you think?
Well, looking at both. Yeah. But looking
at,
I've already made an investment on Monday, therefore I better show up on Friday. Or, gee, the jackpot's getting, you know, it's getting higher. I'm sure, I'm going to make sure I go.
But there is a little method to my madness. So Friday night's the only time that we offer a full meal. Ribeye steaks down to shepherd's pie dinner. And so, of course, we're looking to boost that because each Friday, one of the entities of the post is responsible for doing that in order to raise revenues for their particular interest. Say, the Veterans Relief Fund, Cancer Society, a lot of different things. So, it's exciting to think that we would be able to do that. I understand, Greg, you know, you're looking at it from regulatory, but I can manipulate something that I can really push tickets for and sell. Just one mention. We just started Colorado Lottery in the canteen. We had no idea and how it would do and what have you. Basically, Colorado Lottery told us that we needed to average at least $30 a day in sales. Right now, our daily sales is about $127 a day. That's, you know, lotto, cash five, all that with scratch tickets. Scratch tickets, this past weekend, I totally ran out. So it was exciting. People came in just to play that with their friends and what have you. It was exciting. And I guess that's what I'm hoping that this will build to, is something exciting that the indirect is that it creates a collateral revenue for the post because they're coming in and spending money. So, enough said. I mean, just that's my mindset, and I'm just looking to make this a reality as best as possible.
The way this started, the progressive raffle, so I called the state office and said, can we do this? And I got permission to do this for about 3 weeks. And then I got phone calls that you got to end it because we don't have rules for it. The first 3 weeks, we generated a jackpot of approximately $168 in 3 weeks. The bigger the jackpot got, the more people were willing to. At first, it was, give me a couple tickets for a dollar. We had a dollar ticket and 6 tickets for $5. As the jackpots got bigger, they went from $2 to $5 to $10. Well, we had to end it. We also played this game without it being a progressive. It was during a Bronco game. On that day, it was a 50-50 split. The jackpot was $204. You just let people come up, turn over 3 cards, and until a queen of hearts showed up. But as the game progresses, there's going to be more and more people wanting to buy tickets. And those that started out buying $2 worth of tickets are buying $20 worth of tickets. By letting us sell tickets for the entire week, I think that the lines wouldn't be quite so long. I think on the night of the occasion, it was one of the reasons I had for wanting to be able to sell them all week. Up until it reaches 1,000, we wouldn't be required, if the jackpot reaches $1,000, we wouldn't be required to print these special tickets. Is that
correct?
So when it exceeds $1,000, all of a sudden, rules change now. You've got to buy these tickets. You've got to fill all this out. And I really see that as a deterrent for people. Yes. It's just, I don't want to sit here and fill out all of those tickets, and I want to buy 20 of them.
And we didn't do it for progressive bingo. I mean, we finally set ours at $11.99 and just kept going. But when it was $5,000, $6,000, $8,000, $9,000, you know, we continued just selling, you know, the one-ons and three-ons.
And the difference there is that, you know, in a progressive bingo, you have to, I mean, the law for all bingos, you have to sell your bingo cards at that same occasion.
Well, that's a lot better than having a formal ticket in that all of this information has to be.
Yeah, that's the trade-off that we need to look at. But certainly, your comments are really helpful. And it may behoove us to get in touch with a couple other places that are doing similar things or thinking about doing similar things, just to see how they think about those trade-offs as well.
Could it be looked at as to that daily, that particular day's contribution, rather than the entire jackpot?
So the $1,000 threshold, you mean?
Yes. Over?
I think we'd have to think about that. Shannon's giving me an evil look. We thought about it. Again, this is something, the purpose of this is to get us thinking. So we'll keep thinking on that.
Okay, I just had one mind flash on my question before. What was your response on all members?
That we're going to have to think about it. You bring up a really good point. I think we need to think.
Okay, so still there is possible leeway there that we can loosen that up a little bit.
I think better define it.
Yeah.
Your approach.
Yeah.
What's the purpose? I guess I look at raffle definition, you have to buy a ticket. So why would all members be included? That just, to me, that's not consistent with raffle law.
So the way that, just to explain really quickly how members only raffle works is, the reason that it's progressive and not just a regular raffle. And that is, so we have a meeting with, let's say, 100 people. 100 people come, everybody has the chance to buy a ticket. So let's say 58 people buy that ticket. 58 people have the tickets in their hand. We then put all 100 names of members into a hat, and you pull out a name. And if that name is somebody who bought a ticket, they win the prize. And if it's somebody who didn't buy a ticket, then the prize, that progressive prize, carries over to the next drawing. So everybody, you, in a sense, you have to buy a ticket in order to participate in that raffle, but it's not necessarily the case that somebody's going to win that day. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's still, I guess, it's just that, I hear you. I think it's fine. It's just that the clarity or it's consistent with raffle. I mean, when we're talking about even the printed tickets over $1,000, I guess if that's one that kind of slips a little bit, I think that's where, because I don't think people will buy, if we have to do printed tickets, I don't think charities are going to pay for it because it's expensive to do that.
Right.
And the time it takes to do it, it's going to kill the progressive raffle.
Yeah.
And so I guess if non-members are allowed to be included in the raffle, even though they don't win, but their names are still included, I really think that's kind of, that would be consistent with me of saying, okay, in this progressive bingo raffle, then we don't have to print tickets over $1,000. There's just that exclusion for just progressive raffle, and that's it. Does that make sense? I'm just trying to.
Sure. Yeah, it makes sense what you're saying.
Yeah.
And you know, we certainly understand the deterrent effect, and you see that in a lot of different raffles. It does take a little bit more time, but again, it's having that balance between making sure it's fair under any, you know, under any case, no matter what happens, and making it cheap and easy to do. Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Hey, also, what states did you guys look at?
So we looked at
a lot of states.
There's not a lot. So there's New York, Michigan, Texas. Carla may have a better overall list. Jersey.
That's enough.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's great. No. I was going to say, I mean, I think this is great, all the hard work he has put into this.
Absolutely.
And to bring this up so early so we can kind of all
work on
it and be best for the industry.
That's good.
And I just, Rick, I think we've hit all of your comments except one so far, so I just wanted to hit that really quickly, and we can certainly hear other comments as well. Your last question here, Rick, was if there are any rules that require progressive raffles to be closed out at the end of the calendar year, because currently that's the case with regular raffles. Again, what we try to do is mirror what we do in the progressive bingo language. So if you look at the very last clause in this rule, which is 8.4.9, we've basically copied language over from Progressive Bingo to say that if you are running a progressive raffle and for whatever reason your license isn't renewed for the following year or you lose your license, whatever ends up happening, you basically have to follow the same protocol or same process that you would for Progressive Bingo. So you have to give it away. You have to just do a regular raffle at your next, whatever it is, occasion or whenever you're running your progressive raffle. So there is no restriction on not being able to carry progressive raffles from one year to the next, as long as you, you know, apply for your license.
Okay. As long as your license, you can start in November and carry it into July.
Keep on going, yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Anyone else?
Of course. Sorry. You guys are going to hate that I'm on this board so much. I'm just kidding. I'm trying to be fast. If it does go this direction, I'm still not 100% on that, but with the 52 cards, I think you probably need to have some sort of means of just like checking the bingo balls of verifying the cards before it starts. Well, just because, I mean, again, I don't
know how you do that if you have to put them in envelopes.
I understand that. I just...
If you got 52 envelopes, you got 52 cards.
I understand.
You
know? I know. I mean, but
the game's only going to last 52 times, no matter what
happens. Some way.
I suppose there could be a couple of jokers.
That's the problem.
I agree. I'm not saying you need it. I just, you know, again, my point is, I think there's always going to be a way in every single game you do. They're going to find a way to cheat, but it's self-policing.
Yeah.
And that's why I get nervous. Again, I really wish it was kind of a little more open. I see where you're coming from on it, but you know, just on that. And then the other question I have too is, can the charities run a regular raffle during the session if they're doing this progressive raffle? I mean, it could come up.
Currently, no. You can only run one raffle at a bingo occasion. So right now, the way the rule is written, you could either hold a regular or a progressive.
Okay.
So that's something we need to look
at. Is that applied to just a bar and canteen?
So this is at bingo occasions?
Yeah, at any bingo occasion, whether it's internal to your organization or at a hall.
And Donnie, just to dig a little bit into your first recommendation, are you thinking like a third party, just somebody who's able to go and as they're putting the cards in the envelope?
It might not be necessary. I just thought about that. It's kind of, it's like we do it with the bingo balls and have a player verify those. So do we need to do that with cards?
Right. And is it always the player that does that? You always bring a player in and have them look at it?
At the
balls?
Yep.
Yeah. That's a roll.
Yep. And they verify that they're all on this tray and
But if you had a sealed deck of cards, you could think about it two ways. One, if you have a sealed deck of cards, people can see you have a sealed deck of cards. Then you have to think about, okay, are we going to use envelopes or something else? Is one way you can do that. So there's different ways you can think about that. Like that said, it was locked up in a box with a sealed deck of cards that had been shuffled or something in front of a player. Different things like that you can see if you wanted to continue to verify how you did stuff. Yeah. Otherwise, they could just put them in envelopes and tilt down and be quiet.
I think that was a valid question.
That was a good question.
So, Greg, just I got to get this straight because I'm going to get a lot of questions when I get back. So we have an ongoing raffle for a TV. Even though the TV didn't cost $400,000, we're doing it on the wider ticket. So are you saying that we have this ongoing raffle for, let's say, a date of Labor Day, that's going to affect us?
As long as you're not selling them at your bingo occasions.
Okay.
So, like, if you wanted to sell at your bingo occasion alcohol, then you would, and you're doing a progressive, and you'd rather do the progressive at that bingo occasion, then you can only sell the progressive game at the bingo occasion. Any other time, you can sell your regular raffle tickets. Any other time.
So, that particular day, we can't sell raffle.
You can sell them during the day, just not at that occasion.
If bingo's going on, you can only do one. That's right. What you say.
So if you're doing a progressive, you can do your progressive.
Yeah, so forget about it.
So forget it?
Yeah.
Don't even ask?
Don't ask. It's a done deal,
All right. He said so.
Okay. But no, any other time than at the bingo, and if you're doing a progressive has to be at the bingo occasion, if that's where you want to do it. Any other time outside of that, you can sell any other raffle ticket. If you got 12 raffles going, you can sell all of them.
Did I tell you, Bo, that we've increased our compliance investigators here at the
office? Just leave it on the station. You got a one-way ticket.
Okay. Is that it?
Yeah, unless there are any other comments in the audience or on the board.
Okay.
All right. And thank you all again. That's really helpful. I mean, that's exactly why we started this process early. I think you've given us a lot of food for thought. So moving forward, we'll be looking at starting the formal rulemaking process in August. And you've been through that recently. We went through one late last year, early this year, I believe. So you kind of know how that works. It's a much more structured process, submit written comments in a formal way to our rulemaking folks, and then we'll have a hearing as well. But this is the first and kind of many steps on that road.
On this playing card thing, I guess I don't understand it. Say, do you put it in like encased, protected, all the envelopes? We're talking like a huge wall space kind of thing?
No.
It's about, the one we've got's about 2.5 by 3 feet.
And it's you get all the cards?
Oh, yeah.
Or all the envelopes in there?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think we've seen pictures of ones that are a little bit bigger, but certainly no more than maybe 4x4 or something like that.
I was in Wisconsin. They have boards that are the size of one of those cabinet doors.
Well,
where they keep all the cards on, and it's locked.
And those are full-size plain?
Mm-hmm.
Could you just keep them in a box?
I think it's just
going to
be locked.
In a locked box.
Yeah, a locked box. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess if they're in an envelope, they wouldn't necessarily have to be displayed.
But they aren't displayed, so.
Yeah, they aren't in a locked
box. If they're in a locked box, then
they're all set. Well, it's a glass door.
I know, but if they're in a locked box,
yeah.
So what? You know, they're there.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that has to be displayed is once it's open and it's a non-winning card, you display it so
yeah.
that people can see what.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, good. Okay, moving right along. Do you have something else you want to tell us?
Well, we probably talked about progressive raffles to the hilt today, but there is one thing I wanted to point out is the reason I think this legislation is so good is because of the way it developed. We had a constituent bring an issue to a legislator. We had a legislator who heard the issue, who was not educated on the program, reached out to our office. We spent some time with Representative Singer and got him up to speed as much as we could, and he was open to that kind of conversation, and it translates to what I think is moving the bingo and raffle community forward. So I'm really kind of proud of this legislation. I went and testified on behalf of it, and now it's a reality. We got to work through the details. So I think that's impressive. The other piece that we haven't talked about is legislation that that has unlimited bingo games per occasion, which is House Bill 1260 from this last session. That one essentially just redefines what occasion means, and instead of having a limitation of not to exceed 35 games, it's now wide open. And I think that gives even additional options. Donnie, you had mentioned perhaps more games. Maybe the total winnings per game is reduced, but you have more winners, yeah. Making it more exciting for the individuals who come and play. So I think that's also a move in the right direction. That one, the effective date, I believe, is August 7th on that one, so that's next month. You can start implementing changes to the way you run your occasions. So I think that's all I wanted to say. I think these are two moves in the right direction. There are two moves that this office can support and get behind and work with you on, and I hope this coming session results in even more legislation that moves in the right direction.
Right. The next item on the agenda, and this follows pretty well from what Mike just spoke about. Most of you were either on the board or present at the meeting when we had the John Runge study presentation, I think back in April, that was. There were a number of really great recommendations that were made from that study, and one of those, and this is something I think we've heard from the community as well over time, and one of those is to look at our statutory and regulatory framework, which I think a lot of organizations can find confusing, difficult to deal with. And in some cases, it's fairly outdated. So, based on really John Runge kind of gave us the impetus, based on that, we're looking at doing some level of legislative reform over the next 6 months after the next legislative session. The first step in this is, over time, over the past couple of years, we've kind of compiled a list of revisions to the statute that we think make sense. Again, make it clearer, make it easier to follow. And then as the second step, you know, I think this meeting has been so far for me the best example of the benefits of reaching out to the community and kind of having that commitment to having a dialogue. So as a second step in that, we're looking at convening a group of charitable gaming stakeholders, so bingo licensees, raffle licensees, in what we're calling a legislative task force. And what we're looking from them is essentially helping us generate some new ideas that are sort of based on a broad range of what different stakeholders' experiences are. So revisions to statute that either we haven't seen, and we're also looking to kind of bounce the ideas that we have off of them. So if you, in your materials there, and I hope everybody got them, there's another kind of smaller table that looks like this. We've reached out to some bingo raffle stakeholders throughout the state. I think we have a pretty broad representation here. We have suppliers, we have members of fraternal organizations, we have hall owners, veterans, we have religious groups, educational groups. And we're also going to try to incorporate a couple of different players. We thought that that would be a good perspective in the same way that, you know, we think that's valuable on the bingo raffle advisory board. We think it'll be important to have in this group. And then the last name, you know, I think it's going to be important, not formally maybe, but at least in sort of an advisory role, to have the gaming folks in Colorado involved in this conversation. Dan, do you have a question real quick?
Yeah, my only one was what you just said, the lobbyist for the gaming association seems to me a conflict of interest for bingo, because the gaming association is not for bingo. They're against what we want to do many times. And so if we wanted a lobbyist, then we should find one who would be more in line with bingo raffle situation, since it's a legislative task force for bingo raffle. And I would find it hard to want to have the lobbyists from the Colorado Gaming Association as part of that task force, because I see that as and we've run across that in the last legislative sessions. And I think that's a big conflict of interest for the bingo raffle community.
Right. And apologies if I misspoke there. So the Jeff West won't be a formal member of the advisory board.
You mean the task force?
Sorry, yeah, the task force. Yeah. I think the lesson that we learned this last legislative session, Dan, is exactly what you just said, which is that there are other interests out there that, if we want to pass effective legislation, need to be taken into account. So, if and when we on this task force and in our process of working with the board as well, if we run into issues that we think may run afoul of those same interests, then we want to have somebody there that we can have open communication with, and figure out what the compromise is that's going to allow us to get something through that works for this community. So a great point, Dan. And I think really we're thinking along the same lines. We just feel that it's necessary to have that, again, that line of communication there, even if it's not formal at the actual, you know, task force meetings, that we know that we can talk to,
sure,
to those folks and those interests. Mm-hmm. So the plan as of right now is to, again, we've already reached out to these folks, is to look at setting up a series of meetings over the next 2 months or so. And again, that's to kind of hone our internal agenda, to get other ideas from those stakeholders. And then of course, you know, the advisory board is sort of our formal conduit to the bingo raffle community. So the things that we're talking about, we'll of course be discussing with you. It may take the shape of the kind of conversation that we have today. It may be a little bit different. We'll kind of work that out as we go and as we see what it is that we're putting forward. The ultimate goal of this, of course, is starting in January of next year, and a lot of things are going to happen earlier, but starting in January of next year is to have something, some legislation. Exactly. I think that's about all I have to say about that.
Players are TBD.
Players are TBD.
Input from this group on who that might be, or you...
Actually, yeah, that would be good. So we've reached out to a couple of hall owners, but it would be good, you know, if any of our hall owners, any of other organizations have thoughts on players that might be good to be a part of this. You know, okay. People who've been playing bingo for 20 years and 30 years and may have some ideas on how to bring it forward, or people who've just started playing bingo and maybe have some new ideas.
I think the important thing is someone who's willing to come and participate in the whole
situation. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
So certainly get, you know, shoot me an email or Shannon an email if you have some ideas on players. You can gin up some interest there. That's
all right.
Point, Mike. Thanks.
Okay. Is that it, then? The Secretary of State? Oh, sorry. So the main thing that we want to do for us today is, it's been long enough, we need nominations to elect a new chairman and vice chairman. Do we want to do this with paper or with just voting, with secret voting.
You didn't cover the bingo raffle success story.
No, I didn't cover the bingo raffle success story. I didn't.
Great idea.
So, as Greg mentioned last month, we had the Rungi study, and another thing that came out of that was a suggestion to put forth success stories from our licensees. So we did look to our current licensees and to see who we had been in contact with a lot, and we did go to CAHA, Colorado Amateur Hockey Association, and Kroenke, and went through that story, and you probably saw it in the newsletter.
Yeah, right.
Blurb, and then you also have a big
write-up about right. it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we went through that process with them. Basically, they contacted us with the consultation process. We sat down with them, got the organization license, went through the whole new technology that they wanted to use. And through a mutually beneficial arrangement between Kroenke and CAHA, they were able to raise, as you saw, about $45,000 for youth sports activities. So going forward, we also put in the newsletter, if you look on the second page, it says get your fees waived. We're asking or inviting nonprofits if they feel they have a success story. We'd like you to submit that to one of our fellows, Jordan Sowers, who's in the audience. She has her email on there.
Okay.
Hopefully within the next couple weeks or so, and if we choose one of your stories, we will either, up to the organization, waive your next year's $100 fee, or your third or fourth quarter quarterly report fee up to $250.
Okay, that's so good. Thank
just
you.
A way to try to get involvement.
Yeah, right.
I think that is an area that we've been lacking is sharing our successes. And we want to get more of that information out. The Kroenke story really came from a consultation where they came and reached out to us. They had an idea, and we worked with them to be in compliance. And it wasn't an easy process. It took us a few months to get this rolling, but they've been having a tremendous amount of success in their venues.
Yeah, that's great.
It's been good for the charities that they support. So I think this could benefit the community as others see what others are doing and can take that and apply it with what they have going on in their nonprofits. I think that's just a wonderful way to start this engine turning. So that's kind of the thought process behind it.
Okay. That's good. Okay. Can we move on? So we're going to have elections for chairman and vice chairman. So I need nominations, or we need to begin nominating people first for chairman. So do I have any nominations for chairman?
Dan, just really quickly, this is mostly because I'm new to the office. I haven't seen this turnover in the past. Can you just give us a brief overview of kind of what the responsibilities are of both of those positions and how long they last?
Well, so there's supposed to be new elections every year. They're supposed to be. That didn't happen. There hasn't been any new elections for 3-4 years, right? Since I started.
Four.
And so, and that's because nobody wanted to do it, and we didn't have a full board, you know. Mainly. So I don't want to do it anymore. But what was required is what I noticed when I first was coming before I got on the board. Nobody was making an agenda. Nobody was doing anything on the board at all. There weren't any things being brought up except, I don't like this or I don't like that. And then they'd argue with each other, you know, about stuff. And so nothing much was going on with the board, but what we did was we were able to have some agendas, and we were able to get to the place where we were able to get legislation that allowed the Secretary of State's office to do a rulemaking rather than have to change legislation all the time. That was one of the main things that we were able to accomplish. And the advisory board was some of the main movers on that situation. So the advisory board, as it says, is supposed to advise the Secretary of State, and the chairman is the chairman of the committee, and so he needs to make the agenda, and he needs to push things forward and get all of the members active in similar to today on how things were going with that rule that you're trying to do, and most everybody was involved. And so the chairman's job is to be the chairman and to help the Secretary of State's office in pushing forward their agenda regarding bingo racket. Is the best thing I can say. The vice chairman's job is to do it if the chairman's not doing it, when, you know, to run the meetings and to do other things if the chairman's not able to do it. This is my duties?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I say.
Okay. I was just...
Yeah, no, that's good.
The middleman.
That's right. That's good. Okay, so is there any questions regarding the duties of the chairman from the board members who are getting ready to be nominated? Any? Okay, so I open the meeting for nominations then for chairman. I'm going to nominate somebody. First, I'm going to can I nominate more than one? By rule, by whatever you have to, what do we call this?
Robert's rules.
Yeah.
Right.
Can we nominate more than one? Each person. So I'll nominate, to start with, Donovan Glassburn.
Accept the nomination, I guess.
Okay. Good. Anyone else have any nominations? Don't all go right.
Anyone else? Well, we got the teacher.
I'll second your nomination.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So shall we have a? No one else is going to nominate anybody. Let's see if is anybody interested in being nominated. Let's ask that question. Raise your hand if you might have interest in being nominated. All of you? Okay. Then we might as well nominate the vice chairman. So could I have a nomination for vice chairman? We have a nomination for Tom Bednard as vice chairman. Okay.
Second that.
Okay. Do we have any other nominations? This is going to be too easy. Okay, so... So we have an election, and we don't have to, like, do a secret ballot, it doesn't look like, does it?
We call that a white ballot.
All right, everybody who is in favor of electing Donovan Glassburn as chairman, say aye.
Aye.
And who is opposed? Nobody's opposed? Okay. And who's in favor of nominating Tom Bednard as vice chairman? I'll say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, we have the election. So, beginning next meeting, Donovan, you'll have to do whatever it is. Okay. So, do we have any other comments or questions regarding things that you'd like to talk about regarding Bingo Raffle from the board members or the audience?
And I'd like to see, audience, have we done our job? Have we covered the questions you might have? You know, the reason you were
most of them, all but two people work for the state. As far as I can see. Is that correct?
That is correct. I'd just like to make a closing comment. One, enjoyed the meeting today. This is a far cry from where we were 2 years ago.
It's exciting.
I think it is. There's some energy, especially in this side of the room. And I'd like to challenge Donnie to fill this side of the room and all the members of the board. We need to have more on this side now that we're kind of resolving the board members. It's important that we hear also from this group. Thank you very much for accepting the position, and look forward to working with you.
Well, me too. It's exciting. Well, and likewise back to you all. I mean, for the first time, I think last time here we met, and it was kind of a different meeting, I guess is the best way to put it.
It was.
But the best thing that came out of it, everybody, including the Secretary of State's office, which has been, I mean, Shannon's been around for a long time.
Ever.
Yeah, and ever. She's seen this too, in the changing of the guard, so to speak, that I really, truly think for the first time that you guys are definitely pro doing something great for bingo and pro business, which is what we've got to have for this industry. And we're not trying to increase gaming or anything like that, but I mean, the goal is, I think we need to get it back to where it was, which was a $240 million industry. It's not that's not unfair to ask for. We got this 20 years ago.
Yep.
You know, I think it's pretty simple.
Okay.
I would just like to say that my experience on the board, 5 or 6 years, just seen a tremendous transformation of the state's role in helping the charities. And I say thank you for that.
And I agree. I definitely agree. Before we adjourn, just one question, because I'm in my tunnel. Whatever happened to B3?
To?
The B3 machine thing.
It's not legal.
Right. It's just not legal, and that's the end of it.
That's the end of that.
Even though other states are doing.
Yes. For constitution and statute.
Okay, you want to set the meeting for next time, Mr. Gosper?
Oh, boy. I guess defer to Shannon on what you think is best. What do we want to do, two months?
2 months.
I guess we got some things we've got to discuss as far as legislation, also these rules, to get that, so we kind of get a jump on it, so it's all set and ready to go before. Because the rules hearing you want to do when?
August, they're doing August.
Rules hearing probably won't be until late August, September. September, okay. So I apologize, I don't have...
We should probably do a meeting before then, correct? Before
September.
To discuss kind of a final?
Trying to think what would work best. Yeah. I mean, if we held one in August, that would just be a month out. And I think we...
September.
If we did September, it would be the 11th, which would probably be right after the rules.
Right after the rules goes out. I mean, I guess there are two options here. One is, I mean, we'll certainly send out, I think, kind of a revised based on sort of what we've heard from you. I think we can send out a revised draft, sort of pre-rulemaking. Is that right? Okay, yeah. Yeah, Carl will have to double check. So we could do that and ask for your comments remotely. And I think that worked in Rick's case here. But I guess I'll kind of leave that up to the board if you feel like it would be useful, even if it were just kind of a mini board meeting.
Well, to work backwards, how much lead time, depending on whatever rules are set up, how much lead, since it goes into effect January 1, how much lead time do you guys need to work backwards to implement whatever rules are set? Because I guess where I'm going with that is, we got trying to kill two birds with one stone. We're talking about the task force, talking about legislation.
Right.
At what point do we need to talk about that? You know, those two issues are probably the biggest pending issues right now.
Yeah.
So working backwards, I mean, should we back it up to October? We could, a meeting or the rules hearing, I guess. And then we meet in September,
right,
which then that gives time to discuss legislation. Because that's going to come up fast, as we all know.
Absolutely.
Involved legislation.
Yeah.
So
I think Carla's right. So we'll need to put out a notice at the end of August in order to meet that January 1st deadline.
Okay.
For the rules.
September, and then you can decide what you wanted to talk about.
Right.
I mean, you're the agenda maker, so.
Right. We won't be able, so a meeting in September, we will not be able to talk about the rules because we'll already be in that formal rulemaking process. The only place where we'll be able to discuss the rules is in the rulemaking here. Right. But on the statutory side, on the legislation, I don't think we'll be prepared to have a great conversation probably until September.
So you're thinking you're having a rule hearing meeting before in September before the rule hearing itself?
No.
Well,
so
end of August. Formal comments.
You can submit formal comments, right? Right. But the rulemaking hearing itself will not take place until September. But between when we put the notice out on August 31st and January 1st, essentially, we're in that rulemaking mode where we
can
do like an informal session,
sure,
like we did here. So I think my recommendation would be to look at doing some of the rules conversation, potentially doing that remotely. Because at this point, I think we've gotten some great input from you, and we can continue to do that. I think what's going to be more important is making sure that we have something that's kind of well on its way on the legislative side, so we have something well formed in our minds, and you all can react to that. So a September meeting, to me, would make probably the most sense.
Should we do that around the rules hearing?
I don't...
Our dates are kind of tentatively using what Audrey
are right.
Gave us, so I have found notice in August, which is good, and I have a possible hearing on September 30th. We have comment hearing September 30th through October 7th, with adoption in October 1st. And after adoption, you
Gotcha. So it sounds like if we're thinking tentatively for September, end of September rulemaking hearing, it might make sense to do, did you say September 11th?
September
11th. Which is second Wednesday, which is I think what we typically
sure.
do.
Okay.
I think that's perfect.
September 11th.
That would be actually the notice.
Yeah, so right. we won't discuss rules, and I think we'll
outside
by email or
okay.
That's Patriots Day, by the way. Everybody.
Yeah, is that okay for me? September 11th. That's a that date. Okay.
10 o'clock. Yep.
Okay. I guess, well, do I need to call them? Somebody want to make a motion to adjourn the meeting? Am I in charge now? Or
no, I'll do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
do we have a move to adjourn this meeting?
I make a motion that we adjourn.
We have a motion.
I second.
Okay, a lot of seconds. Okay, all in favor? Yeah.
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 So.